The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Changing pace tonight, doing something I don't typically do. We do have an outside guest on the podcast. He is one half of the Days of Roar podcast, which covers the Detroit Tigers, Mark Gorish. He also does work alongside Evan Petzold of the Detroit Free Press, and they can be found just like we can on all the major apps. I listened to their Gleyber Torres episode, a big chunk of it, and they do a great job. Mark, thanks for coming on with me.
Thanks a lot for inviting me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so we're going to get to some stuff here. We have a common free agent target of interest, or at least the teams do, whether we personally are interested or not. We'll get into that later. But one of the cool stories of 2024 was the out of nowhere surge in August and September of the Detroit Tigers. You trade Jack Flaherty. You might have made one other move. It looked like it was over. It looked like it was another lost Tiger season. You thrust into October, go a couple of rounds, almost went to the ALCS. What was that like?
It was pretty surreal. I mean, I'm pretty old, and the only thing I could equate it to was in 1984, the Detroit Tigers started 35-5, and in this particular run, they went 33-11, coming down the stretch, beat all comers. At the time they began their surge, they had a 0.2% chance of making the playoffs, and they somehow did. The Minnesota Twins helped them quite a bit in that regard, because the Twins basically collapsed. But the AL Central was pretty damn good in 2024, and the Tigers finished, and before they could come back to Earth, the season ended. They had a great run in the playoffs, beat Houston, and shockingly, if Lane Thomas would not have hit a pretty good 97-mile-an-hour fastball from Tarek Skubal at the bottom rail of the strike zone for a 3-run homer, they might have beat Cleveland also and gone to the AL Championship Series. So, yeah, it was an unprecedented, unexpected, beautiful ride, to say the least.
It seems like it. And, you know, going into the Houston series, they'd been to the ALCS 7 straight years. I don't know if we'll see that again in our lifetime or even, you know, young school age kids. I mean, that was an impressive run by Houston. There was a unique storyline because your manager was part of that, you know, early run that Houston had. And ironically, all three games had to be played in Houston. I mean, what was it like going into that? Like, what were the expectations? I mean, you're happy to be there for one, but did you guys think you had a chance against Houston?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, Boston is a sports town that understands when you're good, it doesn't really matter where you play or who you're playing. If you can execute your game, you don't really care about all that outside noise. You're anxious to play and you think you're going to win. I mean, so look, we could argue about this, but, you know, my belief is AJ Hinch is the shrewdest manager in baseball. God knows I call him the puppet master for a reason. You traded Jack Flaherty, his second best starting pitcher, his third best starting pitcher, Reese Olson, was not healthy and was out. He had three minor leaguers starting baseball games during the greater part of the streak, and a rookie in Cater Montero, yet he and Scott Harris together found ways to create advantageous matchups, mixed and matched like crazy, and it was a huge, huge, huge advantage for what they had. And by the way, guess who A.J. Hinch's bench coach was in Houston during his run there? So I think you know the answer to that, right?
I do. Well, for 1 year, it was our manager, yeah, Alex Cora.
So, you know, the bottom line is Alex Cora is a great game manager. He's a great manager, period. But I think a lot of what he learned was at the foot of A.J. Hinch about running a baseball game. So there's a lot of similarities in style to how the two of them both run a clubhouse, run a game, create matchup advantages. And if you like what Alex Cora does and how he manages the baseball game, then you got to have a lot of respect for what A.J. Hinch does.
Yeah, I mean, if I were looking for a manager and he were available, that's a slam dunk. He'd probably be my number one pick, to be honest. I have a ton of respect for A.J. Question, though, it just kind of comes to mind now. A couple years ago, Dusty Baker's contract and A.J. Hinch's kind of coincided. Like, they were both set to expire, and I mean, I'm not locked into Detroit like you are, but from the outside looking in, I was thinking, man, this is perfectly lined up for him to go right back to Houston after, you know, after the Detroit deal runs up. Were you guys worried about that or no? Because the extension happened, I think, in season or something, and it just kind of caught me off guard. And
you know, I doubt it. I mean, if AJ wanted to go back to Houston, I think he could have. So right. I think it was his choice to extend with Detroit. I mean, you know, he didn't have to extend with Detroit. He could have extended, you know, almost any team in baseball would have been more than happy to take a shot with A.J. Hinch if he had decided to manage out his contract in Detroit and been a free agent. So I think he would have been on, you know, lots of teams' radar, you know, that would have paid a whole bunch of money. I mean, the Mets, the Yankees, I think a lot of places would have been lining up to have a discussion with A.J. Hinch. So am I surprised he didn't go back to Houston? No, I don't think Major League Baseball would have been too happy of the idea of him going back to Houston either. And you know how there's subtle little things that go on in Major League Baseball that we don't like to discuss. But, you know, I bet you they would have frowned upon that. You know, Jeff Luhnow was the architect of a team that's got the playoffs 7 straight years. You don't see him being rehired in baseball, do you?
Well, no, but there were some other controversies that kind of got, you know, the main one was obviously the scandal, the cheating scandal, but they had that one guy with he was like harassing like the female staffers or whatever, and they had an internal investigation, they exonerated him, and then that caused a huge scandal, and then sure enough they fired him. But Luhnow just seemed toxic on so many levels, and I don't think he'll never come back to baseball.
He also seemed crazy smart about how to build an org and win.
He was. And I mean, one of the things he was so brilliant with was exploiting like the Venezuela market, because that's where they got Framber. Altuve comes from there. I want to say, the guy with that weird delivery. I want to say his last name's Garcia, but he does the Rock the Baby delivery. I forget mm-hmm. who it is.
Yep. Yeah, it is Garcia.
Oh, that is Garcia. Okay. Yeah. They just could find talent, you know, better than any other team and develop guys. It was just unreal.
Yep. Didn't miss too many. He also, you know, trading Josh Fields for Yordan Alvarez was not a bad deal in its own right either.
Yeah. So. I mean, what trades did they lose? Like, they were just brilliant. I'm envious of how brilliantly architected that team was. But yeah, let's get back to the Tigers. So couple key moves so far. One, Gleyber Torres, and we were in the market for a second baseman, but I don't think, I think Torres was a great fit for you, not so good for us. What were your thoughts on that?
I think if he was 1 year, $15 million, he would have been an outstanding fit for Boston. But my guess is, you know, watching what Breslow is doing, is Kristen Campbell's got a probably a damn good shot at being second baseman on opening day in Boston. If I was going to play him somewhere, that would be at the top of my list. Now, if they want to play him in Pawtucket for 10 days so they get an extra year of service time, that's a possibility. But at the same time, if they don't, they retain the possibility of getting an extra draft choice if he's rookie of the year. So it becomes a much more difficult choice now than it used to be about suppressing service time. So I get why they didn't do something with Gleyber. You know, I'll answer the Tigers offseason in this way. I asked Evan this question on the podcast that came out today that we recorded last night. And I said, when you look at the Tigers offseason, if I said to you after doing what they did, getting into the playoffs, they have a lot of young players on the verge, but if the two adds to the team after what happened last year are Alex Cobb and Gleyber Torres, which moves Colt Keith, an outstanding young player with a lot of upside, to first base. If those are the two moves you're making, what do you think of their offseason? Was it a good offseason or was it not a good offseason? So I'd ask you, as a baseball talker, what do you think of that as an offseason for a team that just made the playoffs?
I think you need one more piece. I think they're both really good moves, but you know, when I look at the Central, I see a division that's there for the taking. You know, if one team gets aggressive, I picked the Royals to win it last year. Cleveland kind of exceeded expectations, but Cleveland does that, you know, often enough. But I don't know. I just, for us, Torres, we've got a lot of bad defense in the infield, and I think you guys can work with it better than we can. So I think that made him a better fit for you guys. But I thought that was a sneaky good move. His market was so quiet, and I don't know what to expect from Cobb. I think he missed most of the year last year, came up late, but had a few quality outings. And I don't know if that's going to adequately replace what Flaherty did, but it could potentially be a very good move.
I think that when you're 37 years old and you had five injuries in 2024, you paid $15 million for a lot of maybe. And and more importantly, the real value in Alex Cobb is probably pitching in August, September, and October if you're going to get there. And who knows if Alex Cobb will be healthy enough to pitch then. So I understand what Alex Cobb is when he's able to pitch. I just think the likelihood of him being able to contribute a lot is pretty small. So not a move I loved. Evan and I had discussed Colt Keith moving to first base last July, saw it as a possibility. But, you know, at the same time, the Tigers easily could have moved Jace Young to second base. We're just getting, like the Red Sox, very, very left-handed. And I understand why they didn't. So I think so far we've done what the Scott Harris president of baseball operations tenure has been, which is kind of operated at the fringes, not really made any splash moves, made zero trades. They've made one trade for a major league player in 3 years. Really, really, really talented at drafting and player development. Thank goodness they're good at that. Very, very shrewd about pitching. You got to have probably one of the top five, if not better, pitching coach and staff and data generating and executing about pitching and sequencing in the major leagues. And I think if you check Fangraphs, especially in the second half of 2024, both that'll bear all that out. But, you know, at the same time, we don't hit well. And I think we were 27th in first base WRC plus in 2024. Moving Cole Keith there and basically moving on from Spencer Torkelson is probably a great idea. So we'll see what happens. I think we need to address the elephant in the room, which is, you know, tell me if you think the Red Sox are serious about Alex Bregman, what they're willing to pay. And if it's not the Red Sox, who do you think it's going to be?
Well, it does sound like it'll be the Red Sox or the Tigers. I don't think it's going to be the Red Sox. If you go back to the winter meetings, there was a report that came out that Sam Kennedy and Alex Cora were extremely pro Bregman. And you could understand that from Cora's standpoint, being, you know, in Houston that one year. But Breslow was very hesitant to do that. And I just think, you know, you mentioned Campbell coming up. I just don't see an obvious spot for him unless they do move Devers. But that's been another elephant in the room conversation. Apparently, Devers is adamant. He doesn't want to come off third, even to the point where he's getting reassurances from his agents saying, you know, he's signed as a third baseman. That's where he wants to play right now. And I know ultimately it's not up to him. It's up to the organization. But at 28 years old, he just doesn't seem to be ready to do that. In a perfect world, he would. But it's just, So anyway, if he's going to stay there, I just don't know where you put Bregman. I mean, he's 6 feet tall. You could put him at first. That's kind of weird, but it could happen, I guess. He's just a much better fit for you guys. And you guys, I think, have the more financial flexibility to get that done also.
I think we have the flexibility. The question becomes, do we have the testicles? That'll be what the nice way of me saying that. And I think I went on a pretty good rant last night about that, which is, look, I'm not even mad at Scott Harris anymore, who usually I am mad at. I'm not even mad at Scott about not having the Bregman deal done by now. I'm mad at the owner. The owner's worth $6 billion. We had a payroll last year of under $100 million. It's $105 million now. It's in the bottom six in baseball. There's just no excuse whatsoever for the Tigers to not figure out a way how to structure a contract that meets Alex Bregman's needs and meets the Tigers' needs. And I understand the concern about signing a 31-year-old, what's going to happen in year five and year six, but it sure seems like a lot of smart teams understand how to front load a bonus and use pay deferrals to make the last 2 years of the contract much less onerous. And I'm shocked the Tigers haven't done that yet, because the Detroit Tigers are a pretty damn good baseball team if they have Alex Bregman at third base now. So what remains to be seen. Now, what I will say to you is I think the second most serious team on the list of Alex Bregman, and you got to also understand that Scott Boras has a lot to do with this. I would say the New York Mets are quite a damn good fit for Alex Bregman, and I think the Yankees are a quite good fit for Alex Bregman. So I would not say it's the Tigers and the Red Sox only. I would say the Yankees and the Mets are actually better fits than the Red Sox. I think the Red Sox are maybe more interested in Nolan Arenado than they are Alex Bregman.
I think they are more attracted to the 3-year deal versus the 6-year deal that Bregman will probably get. And you bring up an interesting point. You know, you have both New York teams. I think Boras probably wants Alonso to go back to the Mets, and that might make the Yankees a little bit more likely. And I'm wondering if perhaps the Red Sox do make a move here for Arenado, if that would, you know, kind of entice the Yankees to make that splash for Bregman. You know, it'll just be interesting to see how those dominoes do fall.
I think Bregman's a good fit for the Yankees, good fit for the park, good fit for the team. I mean, I don't know how much you know about Alex Bregman, but I had a pretty trusted inside baseball source tell me that there is nobody better in Major League Baseball at locker room culture and just, you know, team leadership than Alex Bregman. And when you talk about fit for the Detroit Tigers, who are dominated by young players, I can't think of a better player to put on the Detroit Tigers than Alex Bregman.
Well, when you just simply talk about a championship pedigree, it's Bregman. I mean, he was there for, I think, all but, or maybe it was all seven seasons, actually, to the ALCS. So he would be someone I would covet if you know, if our alignment was different. But I don't hate Detroit. I've never hated Detroit. Even in 2013, you know, we were fortunate enough to win the ALCS. But had you guys beat us, I would have rooted for you guys in the World Series. I would have. That's what I did with Cleveland in 20. And you'd probably hate to hear that because they're in your division. But they tossed us out right away in the DS. And, you know, because of Francona, I just jumped on the wagon and rode them all the way to game seven. But, you know, I want Detroit to be better. And I just think, I don't know if Bregman gets you to the division title, but man, it would be a lot more compelling if you did sign him.
I think it's pretty compelling. I think it raises the floor quite a bit. So, you know, Detroit has a lot of interesting young players, not unlike Boston. And, I think it makes the Torres and Cobb signing a lot more relevant if you got a guy that can hit, you know, 2-3-4 in your lineup right-handed, somebody that's going to hit over 20 homers, that's over a 4-WAR player the last, I don't know how many years in a row, but the last three for sure. So the Tigers, you know, could use him quite a bit. So as far as 2013, I don't know if I can have a discussion about that. It's probably the single greatest Detroit Tiger baseball team from a talent standpoint that was ever assembled. And the fact that one swing of Poppy ended the dreams of what prior to that swing was a unbelievable season, an unbelievable team, and an unbelievable playoff run. I still don't, you know, I kind of just get speechless even thinking about it 11 years later, how the Tigers did not win that series in the World Series. I can still see Torrey Hunter, you know, falling over the fence in Fenway. It's kind of heartbreaking just to even give some thought to that now.
Yeah, I mean, having Verlander and Scherzer, I mean, an amazing 1-2 punch. Anibal Sanchez won the ERA title that year. I mean, I get it. And the crazy thing was the Red Sox, we did what I was hoping we would do in the last few years. You know, most of our prospects hadn't been up yet. So, and they had a few years to go. So we went and got Napoli, Victorino, Johnny Gomes. You know, that was just kind of a patchworked together team. And it was just out of all four championships we won, it was the least expected. And, you know, and you guys, like I said, were an absolute wagon. And when we lost game, I thought you guys were going to beat us anyway. And then when Sanchez outdueled Lester in game one, I'm like, there's just no way. Detroit is the team of destiny here. And then that crazy grand slam in game two, that was exactly it. That's what changed it all. If we go down 2-0, we're donezo.
The only thing I can tell you, Terry, is it would feel different if Poppy had only done that one time, but he did it seem like, you know, 83 times. So Poppy did those kind of things so many times.
Yeah. One of the most clutch hitters ever.
Ever. I don't think ever. So I wanted to ask you, are you happy with, you know, what the Red Sox have done this offseason? I mean, I watched Garrett Crochet throw opening day for the White Sox against the Tigers last year, And me and my baseball boys, we were just kind of sitting there speechless after, you know, the first five innings. It was like, holy smokes, man. I mean, I'd seen Garrett Crochet throw before, but as a starter, and he's throwing 98, and he's got a hammer of a deuce, and he did that many times. I sat behind the plate for him one night. I call him Scuba Light, and I don't say those things too often. So I think you didn't just get a number one. You got a guy that if he can stay healthy, he can win the Cy Young in the American League. And I understand he gave up some talent for him, but when you have the talent that you have in the farm system still, holy smokes, that's a real step forward for Boston right there, let me tell you.
Yeah, I mean, the Bloom era, I'm not a Bloom guy. Most of the guys on the crew aren't, but I was just so sick of the Michael Wachas, the Garrett Richards, Corey Klubers. And this was, the Schwarber trade was big. And he was only a rental in 2021, and I was glad that we acquired him. But this is the biggest trade since the Chris Sale trade 8 years ago. And it was just nice to see them finally commit to something like that. We have to extend him. I mean, we can't let him win the Cy Young, you know, with 1 year left on his deal, you know, so that's kind of half the battle. And putting a value on a guy who has only really pitched one full season in his career is kind of tricky. So I hope they're able to navigate those waters. And I was a big Walker Buehler guy. We knew we needed two starters, and you know, I just wanted Max Fried, honestly. And then in a dream scenario, either George Kirby, Logan Gilbert. So Crochet wasn't really in my top five, but as some of the names came off the board, I mean, I'm glad it happened. I mean, it was amazing on the day that it happened. So I'd give Breslow an A+ for his pitching. And there's rumors we might be in on Tanner Scott, so we'll see. But as far as the lineup goes, we still haven't replaced Tyler O'Neill. So if you told me right now no more big moves would be made, our big fear is that Randall Grichuk might be the move. And at that point, I'd probably give him about a D for the lineup. So I'd probably give him a B- overall in that case. But
what's the word how far away Anthony is before he's taking swings in the show?
Well, he only got called up to AAA in September. So, or maybe it was mid to late August, but it was pretty late. Campbell had an extra month up there in Worcester. So I'd be really surprised if Anthony makes the roster on opening day, but I'd be shocked if he's not up, you know, by mid to late June, barring, you know, injury or something.
And how important is it keeping Story healthy for the whole year?
Man, if you could tell me right now, Trevor Story, you know, would hit to a 250 average, 20 bombs, 80 ribbies, hard not to love what the rest of the lineup is going to do around him. You know, he's one of the X factors for getting us to 90 plus wins. So he's got to stay healthy too. And he's a strikeout machine. That's been the biggest knock on him throughout his career. So, so we'll see.
Been a long time since Trevor Story had a healthy season, sort of, you know, was the year of the free agent shortstops. You guys got stuck with Story. We got stuck with Baez, and I think two guys have gotten wealthy by not really performing too much on those contracts, but it'll be interesting to see. I'll be shocked if Javi Baez ever contributes much to a major league roster again. And
he's a punk. I don't know how he's been with you guys, but prior to going to Detroit, the dude was one of the biggest punks in Major League Baseball.
He's been pretty good in Detroit. He's a good teammate, and he actually has performed terribly. Shockingly, he was about as good a clutch hitter in 2024 as we've had, and he did virtually, I think he hit 160 in non-leverage runners scoring position at bats. But, you know, he's – look, Major League Baseball players, it's a grind. And once you have back problems, it's pretty tough to come back from. And Baez has had back problems for three seasons. And I find it difficult to believe that he'll ever be healthy enough again to be good. You know, people obviously get offended by his style, but all I'll say to you as an old guy, look, people didn't like Robert Parrish and Larry Bird's style either. So when they're on your team, you love them. When they, you know, it's like Bill Laimbeer and Larry Bird hated each other, but they were cut from the same mold, man. So those are great times. And, you know, you love your own guy, you hate the villain on the other team, and Hobby's an easy guy to hate.
Yeah, I don't really recall any recent controversies with him, but he had one with the Mets where they were booing their home crowd. That was kind of weird. And but yeah, hopefully he gets it together. Before we wrap, though, you kind of touched on it earlier, and when Mike Ilitch was alive, I mean, he's passed away in the last several years. I mean, you couldn't really question the commitment to winning. You know, he seemed to empower Dave Dombrowski to do what he had to do to try to get that championship team together, and didn't happen. And, you know, you guys started the rebuild and Dombrowski left. Al Avila came in. Mike Ilitch passes away. The kids have it now. Is that correct?
Yes.
So why is the mindset different? Like, that's what I really want to know. Like, when are you, like, if not now, like, when are you going to spend? Like, what are the kids doing?
I have a simple answer for that. Look, you know, the Ilitch family is extremely successful. They have a monstrously successful peach of business. Okay. They own quite a few casinos. They own a Major League Hockey team and a Major League Baseball team. And the difference between Chris Ilitch and Mike Ilitch is the difference between an entrepreneur and a shepherd for a fortune. So he's got six siblings. And, you know, Mike Ilitch's idea was, I made all this money. I'm going to spend some of it. These are my passions. And I think Chris likes to win. I just think Chris also is more an actuary than he is an entrepreneur. So he's trying to preserve the fortune. So it begs the difference between an entrepreneur who made the money and somebody whose job it is to preserve the fortune. And, you know, like I said, it's a pretty small chasm between what Bregman wants and what the Tigers want to pay him. And Chris Ilitch could easily put one of 12 financial analysts that work for the Ilitch companies on the job to figure out a way how Boris Bregman and the Tigers could all make some type of compromise that keeps everybody happy. But as of yet, they have not done that. So Chris Ilitch has never been seemingly very baseball savvy about winning. He extended Al Avila when he should have fired him. And either you know or you don't know. I mean, professional sports is a tough game. There's a lot of owners that have made a lot of money that are really terrible at understanding how to both make money and win in professional sports. The owners of the Red Sox have only made one or two mistakes in a very long run with how many World Series titles? Four?
Four so, this century, yeah.
That's right. So aside from not re-signing Mookie Betts and saddling Chaim Bloom with the job of basically getting what he could, that's pretty much the biggest mistake they made, right?
It just seems like they pivot quite a bit. I mean, we were over the luxury tax in 2022. Like that's not what rebuilding teams do, you know? And then in 2023, they signed Corey Kluber. That was the only pitching acquisition. And then, you know, they spent an unprecedented amount of money at the back end of the bullpen with Chris Martin and Kenley Jansen. And Sam Kennedy was telling Ken Rosenthal in an interview that winter that we were going to win the 2023 World Series. I don't know. it's just a really toxic, you know, front office. And I think John Henry is pretty arrogant, and I don't think he takes accountability. And I don't know why last year, I mean, Breslow was literally, I say this on the podcast almost ad nauseum, he was like their 11th or 12th choice. Like, nobody wanted the job. It was just toxic. And Breslow ended up with it. And maybe the next few years they can kind of rehab things a little bit. But, you know, and I think the future is bright, but they really...
The future is real bright for the Boston Red Sox. I think Chaim Bloom did a pretty ridiculous job at rebuilding the infrastructure underneath. You know, I know he's taken some heat there, but
yeah,
he didn't leave the cupboard bare, my man. So
with position players, I mean, we've got the Fort Knox of farm systems, but he didn't really do much with pitching. Like, everyone in there is either a Breslow guy or a Dombrowski guy. There's no Bloom guys in there. And I think the highest ranked prospect we have now, we gave one of them to Chicago in the Crochet deal, but we got that Perales kid that had Tommy John a year or so ago. So that was one of the more mind-boggling things. I mean, Tampa is the mecca of pitching development. That's where we got our guy, and he just never got that done. And he probably should have fired Dave Bush coming into 2023 to see, you know, if, you know, maybe at least the major league guys could take a step forward. But it just, he committed to Bush, and then the way he handled the trade deadlines, I mean, you could have gotten some nice prospects for Nathan Eovaldi, Xander Bogaerts. We did okay in the Christian Vasquez deal. That was one of the deals we did make. We got, you know, Willie Abreu in that. But his performance at the trade deadline was really bad. They kept calling it, the beat writers would call it analysis paralysis. He just froze. So he'll get another chance in St. Louis.
Yeah, we'll see what happens in St. Louis. I still think pretty highly of his skills, and I think we are going to be confronted with something weirdly similar. I find it hard to believe. You know, Tarik Skubal has two seasons left, and I find it difficult to believe that the Ilitch family is going to step up and sign Tarik Skubal to what could be a, you know, Gerrit Cole-level contract for a pitcher, especially – if he's very good this year, and you're going to be confronted with the question, do you move him? Or, you know, I don't know how you can't, if you're not signing him, I don't know how you can't trade him after this year. So
you'd have to get a haul, but I mean, not extending him would be the ultimate indictment on the Ilitch kids, I would think.
Well, I mean, my question to you is, do you want to extend a pitcher for 8 years and $320 million? That's 29 years old. That's a real question, you know. So, I mean, especially a guy that's had – go ahead.
I would do it coming into this season. I'd give him an 8 or 9 year deal. And
yeah, I don't disagree with you. I just think that they already had discussions and they didn't go well. And – it's just not part of how Scott Harris wants to build his baseball team, doing something like that. I find it hard to believe that Tarik Skubal will be extended by the Detroit Tigers. I said as much last night. And if you want to listen to Days of Roar today, wherever you listen to podcasts. Evan and I had a pretty frank discussion about it. And look, when your partner's a beat writer, he's in that room and talking to people all the time, we both find it hard to believe that Tarik Skubal will, you know, be re-signed by the Detroit Tigers for an extension. So that's if you want to know how that looks from a Detroit perspective.
Detroit's is an awesome city. And I want baseball in Detroit to be awesome, you know, and I hope it happens. Days of Roar, by the way, one of the best podcast names I've heard. You know, it just, I don't know what it is. I was a big fan of the movie Days of Thunder, and that's, you know, a different animal, but I kind of grew up, NASCAR was actually my first sport, believe it or not, but But yeah, just Days of Roar just has this epic ring to it. And you guys have a great vibe. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to listen to it more, especially as you guys hopefully get relevant. Last year when I was watching you guys in October, I was like, they need two bats. And you got one of them. So I need you to get Bregman. And it's just baseball's better if the Tigers are good.
Well, I'm hoping, and I hope you give it a listen. We have a lot of great guests, you know, all kinds of people all from all over baseball. We also have two great broadcasters. We have three, actually, that we have on all the time. You know, from Detroit, we have Jason Benetti on all the time. And if you've never listened to Jason Benetti do a baseball game,
then he's phenomenal. Yeah, he came from Chicago. I do know him.
Shame on you. I mean, as far as any baseball fan that does not listen to Jason Benetti do a baseball game, it's 50% the best baseball broadcast you've ever heard and 50% a comic at your local comedy club doing pop culture at the same time. It's pretty unbelievable. We also have Dan Dickerson, who has got to be one of the three best play-by-play guys on radio there is. Our color guys are great, too. They come on all the time. Bobby Scales, Andy Dirks. So, you know, we have guys like Mike Farron and just, you know, Chandler Rome from the Astros. We have people from all over baseball all the time. Hope everybody gives a listen. I'm kind of subtly rooting for the Red Sox in the AL East this year. I like all the young players. It's a lot of fun. And I hope you're very, very disappointed when the Detroit Tigers sign Alex Bregman here, hopefully before the 15th of January.
I promise you I won't be disappointed, because I don't think he's a six-year fit for us. So he is for you, not for us. So we'll see, but we are going to wrap on that. I appreciate you coming on. Maybe we'll do something later on in the year, or maybe coming into the postseason if you can recreate the magic. But it was fun having you.
I've been known to travel a little bit. I'm taking a trip to London this summer with my son to go see some rock and roll in London, and maybe we can try to come to Fenway and see how the Tigers are doing. We'll give you a heads up if we do that.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we're going to wrap on that. We are on Nolan Arenado watch, Tristan Casas watch as well. There's, you know, some rumblings. He could be on the block. So we'll be back as things develop. Everyone, take care.